vacha. Kridashakteshu bhopeshu tadgavo durachadine svairam sarantyo vivishus trina lobhena gavaram. Shukadev Goswami said, while the cowherd boys were completely absorbed in playing, their cows wandered far away. They hungered for more grass, and with no one to watch them, they entered a dense forest. Ajagavo mahishyascha nirvishanto vanadvanam ishikat ishikathavin nirvishu krandantyu davatarashiti. Passing from one part of the great forest to another, the goats, cows, and buffalo eventually entered into an area overgrown with sharp canes. The heat of a nearby forest fire made them thirsty, and they cried out in distress. Te pasyanta pasun gopa krishna ramadayastada jathanuthapatha na vidur vichinbanto gavam gati. Not seeing the cows before them, Krishna, Rama, and their cowherd friends suddenly felt repentant for having neglected them. The boys searched all around, but could not discover where they had gone. Sinanaistat kuradach chinayar goshpadaya ankitaya gavam maragaman vaganam sarve nastajivya vichetasaha. Then the boys began tracing out the cow's path by noting their hoof prints and the blades of grass the cows had broken with their hooves and teeth. All the cowherd boys were in great anxiety because they had lost their source of livelihood. Munjatavyam brastamaragam karandamanam swagodhanam samprapya trishita santas tataste sanyavaratayam. Within the Munja forest, the cowherd boys finally found their valuable cows, who had lost their way and were crying. Then the boys, thirsty and tired, herded the cows onto the path back home. Ta'ahuta bhagavata mega ghambiraya gira swanamnam nenaram srutva pratinedhu praharshitaha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead called out to the animals in a voice that resounded like a rumbling cloud. Hearing the sound of their own names, the cows were overjoyed and called out to the Lord in reply. Tatasamantad davadhuma ketur yadrichaya bhut kshayatrid vanokasham samirita sarathinol bhanol mukhair vilelihana stirajanganam maham. Suddenly a great forest fire appeared on all sides, threatening to destroy all the forest creatures. Like a chariot driver, the wind swept the fire onward, and terrible sparks shot in all directions. Indeed, the great fire extended its tongues of flame toward the moving and non-moving creatures. Purport. Just as Krishna, Balaram, and the cowherd boys were about to take their cows back home, the forest fire previously mentioned raged out of control and surrounded all of them. Tam apantanam paritodavagnim gupaschakava prasamiksha bhartibhitha uchuscha krishnam sabalam prapanna yathahari mrityu bhayaradita jana. All the cows and cowherd boys stared at the forest fire, attacking them on all sides. They became fearful
The boys then approach Krishna and Balaram for shelter, just as those who are disturbed by fear of death approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The boys address them as follows.
Krishna, Krishna Mahavira,
He Rama Moga Vikrama, Tavagnina Dayam Manan, Prapanam Stratumaratata.
O Krishna, Krishna, most powerful one, O Rama, you whose prowess never fails, please save your devotees who are about to be burned by this forest fire and have come to take shelter of you.
Nunam tvad bandava Krishna nahart nacharhantya visasaditum
vayum hisaravadharamakya
twannatastvat parayanaha.
Krishna, certainly your own friends should not be destroyed. O knower of the nature of all things, we have accepted you as our Lord, and we are souls surrendered unto you.
Sri Shuka Uvacha Vacho Nishamya Kripanam Bandunam Bhagavan Hari Nimilayata Mabhaishta Lochanani Yabhashataha.
Shukadev Goswami said, hearing these pitiful words from his friends, the Supreme Lord Krishna told them, just close your eyes and do not be afraid.
Purport.
This verse clearly reveals the simple, sublime relationship
between Krishna and his pure devotees.
The absolute truth, the Supreme Almighty Lord, is actually a young, blissful cowherd boy named Krishna.
God is youthful, and his mentality is playful.
When he saw that his beloved friends were terrified to the forest fire, he simply told them to close their eyes and not be afraid. Then Lord Krishna acted, as described in the next verse.
Tateti militakseshu bhagavan agnimalbhanam pitvamukhena tankrichtrad yogadishovyamochayat.
All right, the friends replied, and immediately closed their eyes. The Supreme Lord, the master of all mystic power, opened his mouth and swallowed the terrible fire, saving his friends from danger. Purport. The cowherd boys were suffering from extreme fatigue, hunger, and thirst, and they were about to be consumed by a horrible fire, forest fire. All this is indicated here by the word Krichtrat.
Om Agyan Timirandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmoy Sri Guruve Namaha.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Find in this wonderful chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. It appears to be a very ordinary day in Vrindavan. Of course, ordinary days in Vrindavan are extraordinary. Nothing is ordinary for a devotee of the Lord. Every moment in our life is an extraordinary display of Krishna's divine mercy upon us. We should never see anything in this world to be ordinary. We should know that everything is happening orchestrated by the divine mercy and loving sentiments of Krishna. And everything that is happening everywhere, the movement of every molecule and atom, the movement of every blade of grass, is happening by the all-loving, supreme, mystical power of Lord Sri Krishna. Therefore, a devotee knows that nothing is simply ordinary. Even if you are sitting in an empty room, you should know that every atomic particle in the walls and the floor are very vigorously moving about by the divine arrangement of Sri Krishna. And beyond this little room is a country, a planet, a universe, a creation. Beyond that, the spiritual world, where all things are coming together in such a way for a specific purpose, which is aimed at every one of us to gradually bring us back to our eternal loving relationship with Krishna. So therefore, for a devotee, every moment of life is the most exciting, wonderful adventure. Whatever he's doing, whether he's driving in his car, or sitting, or going to sleep, or whether he's studying, or whether he's preaching or cooking, or whether one is doing puja, a devotee is always looking to understand the divinity of the supreme mercy of Krishna in everything, at every time. For a materialistic person, if his senses and mind are not completely captivated by some sense objects, that person becomes very bored with life. Due to that boredom, human society is creating so many artificial ways of trying to excite the senses. People spend, billions of dollars on what they call special effects for various movies and television shows, just to excite people's minds, because they know people like their minds to be excited. Why? Because people are by nature in this world bored to death. They hate life. There's a fact, everyone is like this, and the bodily concept of life. And what we find through advertising, people are simply trying to exploit our boredom by trying to make great profits over exciting our senses and our mind. In the West, I don't know how much, I guess in the East too, after, I don't see the movies here, I don't see them in the West either, but you see the advertisements everywhere here in Bombay. Everywhere you go, these gruesome looking movie advertisements, cinema. And practically every thing you see is either sex or violence. See some half-naked woman with blood all over her. And then there's the name of the movie, it's usually some name of God. I don't know what it has to do with some woman who has just been beat up, stabbed. Huh? In this way, these horror movies, violent movies, movies that have tremendous amount of sexual activity, these are the most popular. Why? Because people are so bored with life. They're just looking for some excitement. And they can't really find it in their own life. So they do like this. They just completely forget everything, and their minds and senses become completely compassionated, become passionately involved in all this passion, and all this violence, and all this fear, and all this lust. And some people, they become so crazy. Communalism, violence. This isn't simply because of certain religious principles. It's because people are so bored. They just want some action in their life.
Let's burn, let's destroy, let's kill, let's riot. It's a fact. It really has nothing to do with philosophy. It has to do with frustration. Because usually they just take it on their own people who have nothing to do with the philosophy. Huh? And what is gambling? Gambling is simply another vent because we're bored with life, we're frustrated, we see no excitement, we see no flavor or beauty in life, so we have to somehow or other get our senses and mind just completely worried whether I'm going to win or lose. And this worry brings action and excitement, vitality, and we consider this fun, pleasurable. Huh? Worrying is pleasure. All gambling means is the process of increasing your worrying. You just worry like anything. But at least there's some activity in worrying, some excitement. So we see in this world, we're just taking a few out of millions of examples, of how people are so perverted just trying to find some meaning, some excitement, and some action in their life. But a devotee understands simple living and high thinking. The more you understand Krishna, the more you realize there's complete, wonderful display beyond what any man can produce with all of his special effects, taking place right before our eyes at every moment by the will of Krishna. A devotee can just look at a flower and it will just bring such excitement, such vitality to his life. Oh, how Krishna has made. So soft, so beautiful, how it has grown, how it's sent. This is wonderful. And Krishna has come to display these wonderful, wonderful pastimes. And a devotee simply by remembering this lila is full of just such love and devotion to Sri Krishna. By hearing Krishna's pastimes, by chanting his name in this mood of Krishna consciousness, by just seeing the world, a devotee is completely satisfied. He's at the edge of his seat at every moment, just witnessing the beauty, the glory, and the supreme opulence of God before him. A Krishna conscious person can simply look at the sky and find more pleasure, more excitement, more invigoration than these karmi people seeing all these blood-stained, violent movies. It's a fact. Srila Prabhupada once said that the sky is situated within the Brahma Jyoti. The Brahma Jyoti is manifesting from the body of Krishna. It is the rays coming from the body of Krishna. He said, because the sky is emanating from the body of Krishna, that is why the sky is blue. Huh? Scientists may have their theories, but this is the actual truth behind why the sky is blue. Because after all, it's actually very mystical. Air is clear. Air is completely transparent. Did you ever see blue air? Huh? Air is clear. But the sky, when it's not polluted by all exhaust fumes, if you look at the sky, it's deep, dark blue. The most beautiful blue that no paint and no man can ever imitate. So how the sky is blue when all it is air, and air is clear? This is Krishna. Such a magician. Huh? Therefore, everything a devotee looks upon, he just sees the wonderful, exciting artwork of Sri Krishna. And he just remembers the beauty and the wonder of Krishna behind it. Just as Srila Prabhupada said during one morning walk along the Venice beach at the Pacific Ocean in California. Beautiful sunset. You think this art is beautiful? you should see the artist who has painted it. And another time, devotees were looking at the sky. It was at night. And they were just wandering, so many millions of planets and so many millions of stars. And they were asking Prabhupada, are they stars? Are they planets? How far are they? Of what extent can we perceive the stars in the universe? And asked all these questions. And Prabhupada gave a very simple reply. They asked him, what is it about all these stars? And Prabhupada said, they are as if Krishna has painted them on the sky. It's actually a very profound answer, which includes all truth. It is simply Krishna's lila. For us, we cannot fathom, with all of our big, big, sophisticated telescopes and computers, we cannot fathom even one star. But for Krishna, it's just like a little painting. Just like sometimes Anjali, Hridayananda's daughter, she makes little paintings and offers them to me. And we think, oh, how nice, she has made nice painting. Huh? But for Krishna, the whole universal creation, which is so unfathomable to our mind, just as simple as Anjali has painted a little piece of paper, he paints the whole sky and all the planetary systems and all the solar galaxies and all the universes and everything else. So when a devotee sees in this light, just by looking at the sky in the day or in the night, he's simply struck with wonder and love. His heart just overflows with love. Krishna, you are wonderful. I simply want to, whatever you provide is just so wonderful. Anything a devotee sees, anything he hears, anything he smells, all his senses are simply totally enlivened and excited to experience Krishna. This is Krishna consciousness. So if we are bored, if we are not finding ecstasy and excitement and adventure at every moment, it means we are not Krishna conscious. It means we are still material conscious. It means we are forgetful of Krishna. It means we still have to go through all these artificial devices just to forget the boredom, the frustration of the bodily concept of life. It is a fact. But while we are in this state, a devotee wants to purify his senses by always engaging him in the loving service of the Lord, by worshiping the deity, by having wonderful, wonderful sankirtan with so many loving devotees, by hearing the glories of the Lord in the Srimad Bhagavatam, by engaging in the service of the Lord, whether it be cooking for the deities or cleaning the children's toilets. A devotee simply feels such bliss and such love just keeping his senses always with Krishna in his service. Nothing is ordinary. Srila Rupa Goswami has said that a Krishna conscious devotee is very, very attentive and careful even to execute the most seemingly ordinary activities of life. Nothing is routine for a devotee. Everything is a new, exciting adventure. Even when we rise in the morning to brush our teeth, it may think, oh, I'm brushing my teeth again. I do this every morning. So what? Huh? If I brush my teeth nicely, I'll never have to see Muralidhar's face in his lila as a dentist. Huh? But actually, even such an ordinary activity is wonderful. It's blissful. It's sweet nectar. Why? Because we are just like the gopis, whatever they were doing. This is for Krishna. Devotee, he's thinking, oh, these teeth, they are for Krishna. Everything is for Krishna. For Krishna, I will be clean. For Krishna, I will remove all of these things that are not very pleasing. It is all for Krishna. It is seva. It is an act of surrender. In that consciousness, I'm doing this to please my Gurudev, because he wants. In this consciousness, the fact is you can attain to perfection of life by brushing your teeth. What to speak of everything else we are doing for Krishna in his service, in our Guru's mission in this world. So here we find the cowherd boys and the cows. They are just like an ordinary day. They are just taking the cows to the pastures. They do this every day. And the cows, they are being, the cowherd boys, they are simply playing. Playing all wonderful games for the pleasure of Krishna. Having so much fun. There's never a boring moment in Krishna consciousness. We find, we never see the Brijbasis ever bored. They're either dancing and singing and playing, or they're just running away from terrible demons, or they're crying in separation. Huh? They're always busy for Krishna. Huh? Similarly, it is Krishna's representative, the spiritual master's service to keep us busy for Krishna, somehow or other. That is Vrindavan. So here we find calves and cows. They are being allured by fresh grasses. Just see how devotees get themselves in difficult troubles. They become allured by even the ordinary sense objects of this world. It's like in your daily activity, you're not expecting anything to happen, but the objects of the senses are always trying to just take you away from Krishna. Just try this, just taste this, just see this, just smell this, just feel this. The sense objects are always like grass, just taste me, touch me. And in this way, we little by little, we just get distracted from Krishna's herd. So these sense objects in the forms of the blades of grass, which are the ultimate pleasure for cows, is grass. they were just taking them further and further and deeper into the forest. They were just thinking, it's all right, no problem. We will enjoy. Similarly, we are all part of Krishna's herd of cows. We are all his devotees. We are all in his association. But the grasses of material life are always trying to just little by little, in the most innocent and unsuspicious way, just trying to just try this, just taste this, just feel this, just think this, just read this. Just trying little by little. And so unsuspectingly, we're just, yes, very nice, very, very nice. So when the cowherd boys and Lord Shri Krishna and Balaram, they found, where are they? The cows, they are gone. They started looking. But here we find how expert the cowherd boys were. They were very scientific in how they herded the cows. Very intelligent. The greatest science is common sense. We were speaking to someone the other day and saying the greatest philosophy in life is simple common sense. We can come up with all these big elaborate explanations with all gigantic words to philosophically explain everything. Srila Prabhupada, just common sense. They could explain everything as it is. And all this philosophy is to somehow or other, just like if you have a thorn in your leg, you take another thorn to get it out. All this big philosophy, which is so complicated, is all just to captivate our complicated minds, just to bring it back to the point of just common sense, that you're Krishna's servant, surrender. Chant Hare Krishna. So the cowherd boys, they simply looked on the ground and they saw the grass that had been eaten, and they realized the cows have been here. And they were just following wherever grass was less size, because they knew this is where cows have eaten the grass. So they were following the trail of the grass that were eaten by cows and by the twigs that were broken. Because wherever they saw a twig broken, they knew the cows stepped on this twig. So we are in the right direction. So they came closer and closer and closer, and the cows, poor little cows, they were so far away from the cowherd boys, because eating the grass, they just forgot everything about the cowherd boys. By the time they realized, they didn't know where they were. They were completely lost. They had no idea how to come back. They became terribly afraid. A devotee is terribly afraid to be away from Krishna for even a moment. We should be afraid like anything that Maya may take us away from Krishna. So then they started to call out, and Krishna started calling all the cows by their names personally, and all the cowherd boys were calling out the names, and the cows heard Krishna's voice. They became so happy, they began to dance. And they dancing, not just running, but dancing and running together, they came back to Krishna and the cowherd boys. And it was a wonderful, loving reunion between the cows and the cowherd boys. And they were all so happy together again. And then they started going along the path back to Nandagaon, their home, the place of Nanda and Yashoda. And then what happened is this. All of a sudden, there was a massive raging forest fire. This was not an ordinary forest fire. It is described that the flames of this fire was being kindled by the wind. The strong winds was making the fire grow bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And soon it was surrounding them on all sides, and it explains that the tongues of these fires were their flames. And what is the nature of a tongue? The tongue wants to eat something. So the tongues of these flames were just coming at the cows and the cowherd boys and all creatures as if they wanted to just swallow them, eat them, kill them. So they were in a most dangerous predicament. So in this condition of life, the cows and the cowherd boys, they just turned to Krishna, and they turned to Balaram. Yeah, Krishna, Balaram. They did not say this, but it is obvious that this was their consciousness. We have been playing with you. We have been wrestling with you. We have been jumping upon you. Sometimes we defeat you in sports. But now that this fire is all around, and we are in a helpless state, not even massive rains could help us with the amount of time we have to live. No fire brigade. Our parents, they are not anywhere close by. We are completely alone. All we have is you. Krishna, Balaram, we know your great power. We know that you can save us. No one else, nothing else. It is a fact. Samsara dhavanaladita loka. This material world is like a forest fire. At any moment, even in the most ordinary day where we're just doing our most ordinary activities, all of a sudden, massive fire can break loose in our life, and we're in the most desperate, helpless condition. And all we have is Krishna. We see it happens every day. It is explained by the great acharyas that in a forest fire, generally nobody lights the forest fire. But just by the nature of the wind and the bamboos, there's rubbing sparks and the fire begins. So similarly, even with no intention, with all good motivations, completely beyond our control, sometimes terrible, gruesome fires just break out in our life. But the fact is, this whole world is a forest fire. The tongues of the flames of this forest fire are time, which are consuming all of us, bringing us closer to our death. This is a blazing fire. Sri Radha Gopinath. So in this condition, the cowherd boys and the cows, they turn to Krishna. Please, we take shelter of your lotus feet. And Krishna, in such a simple, innocent, childish way, he said, all right, everyone close your eyes. It's like a game. It's like when children play. All right, everyone close their eyes. So the cowherd boys and cows, they just accepted whatever Krishna wanted. Now, if you were surrounded by all these flames and everything like this, you would probably not want to close your eyes because, you know, if you close your eyes, something might come at you and destroy you. When you're in a dangerous position, that's the time to keep your eyes open, isn't it? To protect yourself as far as possible. But Krishna said, just close your eyes. Why did he tell them to close their eyes? There are several explanations. One is, for them, it was a terrible, terrible crisis. It was life or death. But for Krishna, it was just another one of his playful games. It was his lila. No problem. Let's make a game out of it. Close your eyes. Another reason is this. And this is very important. He wanted them to prove that they had complete faith in him. What we would say, blind faith. When you close your eyes, you're blind as long as your eyes are closed. Right? If you want to know what a blind man experiences, you just close your eyes. You are factually blind when your eyes are closed. So we talk about blind faith. That means faith beyond our understanding. Faith in the simple knowledge and realization that God is good, that He is all merciful, that He will protect me. So in the most dangerous predicament where flames were coming at them, the time when you need to see and protect yourself most, Krishna said, close your eyes. When you close your eyes, you're in a helpless condition. You can do nothing for yourself with your eyes closed. In other words, they were accepting the position that Krishna, I am sent, percept, in toto, I am yours. Now you do what you want. We don't know what's going to happen anymore. And because of this blind, complete faith in Krishna, they proved the highest level of Krishna consciousness. And of course, as we have explained, another reason that Krishna wanted them to close their eyes is because sometime earlier at Brahmandagat, he ate a little bit of clay. And all Balaram and the cowherd boys came to Mother Yashoda. Ah, we saw Krishna ate clay. He ate dirt today. Mother Yashoda, what? People are complaining he's stealing butter. People are complaining he's stealing sweetmeats and yogurt. But now he's eating dirt? She said, Krishna, I have so much yogurt and butter and sweetmeats and everything in the house. Why are you eating dirt? You'll get sick. Said, no, I have not eaten dirt. They are lying. He said, Balaram is a liar. That's what Krishna said. And his friends are also liars. Bhagavatam, he directly says that. But actually, this lying is only in the lila to increase Krishna's pleasure. And actually, whether they lied or not, we don't even know who is the liar. But in either case, we know it is just a sweet, loving lila. The only intention was for the pleasure of the beloved. So
Krishna was in a lot of trouble with Mother Yashoda. And she looked in his mouth, and in order to get her to forget the idea that he ate dirt, he had to show her the entire material cosmic manifestation, which she saw within his beautiful little mouth. So Krishna was thinking, if they have worried Mother Yashoda by saying how I ate a little dirt, and she was so much concerned with my health, what is she going to think if they tell her that I ate an entire forest fire? So therefore, let them close their eyes, and they won't know how this forest fire disappears. They'll have no evidence that I ate it. So in this way, it was to protect Mother Yashoda from any extra worries that he did it like this. He told them to close eyes. But in every sense, we find that whatever Krishna does is simply for the ultimate pleasure, satisfaction, protection, and guidance of his devotees. And a devotee who hears these wonderful pastimes submissively will have complete faith, absolute faith, that Krishna is our only shelter in this great forest fire of material existence. Is there any questions? Yes?
Maharaj, in this material life, this karmis which you are talking about, they go to the movies, they do gamblings, all sorts of things, and they enjoy from that. But we have seen it, this karmis, whatever they go for it, this movies or this gambling or whatever the things, after certain time, they get frustration. They want something new out of it. Now the same thing for us, when we come into spiritual life, because we are on a very neophyte angle, we regularly hear this Bhagavatam class, we chant the holy name, but we have one fear in our mind that because completely we have a neophyte and we have that nature of our karmi life, we have that fear that the way these karmis are getting frustration after some time. And the same thing, it can happen in spiritual life also, because we have to spend our whole life and we have not got that pure nectar of spiritual life. Is it not so that after some time of time, we will get that frustration and we will not be able to get the charmness which we are getting right now? How to see that this thing doesn't happen in our life?
Not only, it definitely will happen like that, unless you are very attentive and enthusiastic. What you put into spiritual life is what you get out of it. The tendency after some years, we become very familiar. Oh, I've been doing this. And we start doing less tapasya. That means we stop trying. We stop putting our heart and energy into it. Generally, a new devotee is very inclined toward tapasya. He wants to work hard. He wants to give up things. He wants Krishna. But after we have these things for some time, yes, Bhagavatam class at the beginning, it was new, I wanted to hear it every day. But then after a while we think, I need a little extra sleep today, or it's not very important, or it's a long distance. In this way, we become familiar and we stop putting effort, we stop putting endeavor, we stop looking for Krishna in devotional service. We stop being enthusiastic, and then a vicious cycle takes place. Because you're not putting life and enthusiasm into your service, Krishna is not going to reciprocate by giving you any excitement in your devotional service, by giving you any taste in your devotional service. It will just, because you're dealing with it materially, Krishna will reveal himself through devotional service materially. That means we're stopping the tapasya of trying to surrender to our service. But if you're trying to surrender to your service and you're enthusiastic to do the tapasya of doing it for Krishna's sake, not because I like it, not because it's enjoyable, but I'm doing a tapasya for surrender for Krishna's pleasure. If you do that, the taste, the nectar, the excitement, the realization, everything in Krishna consciousness becomes sweeter and sweeter and more exciting and more wonderful every day. So it is the negligence of our conditioned nature which doesn't want to surrender, doesn't want to do tapasya, which creates this whole syndrome of boredom, even in devotional service. But tapasya means even if I'm bored, I'm going to do it for Krishna. I'm going to be enthusiastic for Krishna. Huh? I'm going to come every day no matter what, because I'm going to listen every day as much as I can. Why? Because this is what Krishna wants of me. Huh? If you perform that tapasya, you'll never lose your taste for Krishna, but will ever be increasing. So we have to be very careful. Just like the example often given is this material world is like a river that's flowing to the ocean of birth and death. And in order to reach Krishna, you have to swim upstream. It's a struggle. And if you're not struggling, what's going to happen? You're going to go downstream. Struggling to be Krishna conscious, you're going to go down. That is the means of attaining Krishna consciousness. Any other questions?
Maharaj, when you talk about tapasya, said by Rupa Goswami in one of his six principles that we should not over-endeavor in devotion service also. Over-endeavoring in devotion service. So when do you come to know exactly what you are doing is not over-endurance, just a tapasya?
You must accept guidance. The fact is you do not know. A neophyte devotee does not know what is over-endeavor. You must accept guidance. Because sometimes in our excitement, we engage in particular types of austerities that cannot endure. And ultimately, because we're still basically conditioned souls, if we put ourselves in situations beyond our capacity to endure, our mind, our senses become very, very disturbed, bewildered, confused, and it's a great detriment to our spiritual life. If a devotee is not getting enough sleep, he cannot think properly. He cannot control his intelligence. Anxieties just become completely overwhelming. If a devotee does not eat enough, he becomes so weak, he cannot do his proper service. Therefore, Krishna says this path is not for one who eats too much or eats too little. Sleeps too much or sleeps too little. The supreme tapasya is to take exactly what we require to do the optimum performance in our devotional service. No more, no less. More than that is sense gratification, less is foolishness. So we need guidance. We have to get enough sleep so that we could sit and listen to Bhagavatam class nicely and chant our rounds nicely and do our service nicely. But if we sleep too much, then we are just wasting our life and being consumed by the mode of ignorance. It's very delicate. And if we eat too little, we become very weak, sometimes diseased. We can't do our service properly. We can't think properly. And if we eat too much, we want to go to sleep also. We're simply spending our day trying to digest food. And our tongue becomes uncontrolled, just allowing it to do what it wants. You have to control all the senses on all sides by the intelligence, Krishna says. So we have to organize our life in such a way that minimal sense gratification, maximum service, but in such a way that we can endure month after month, year after year, throughout our life. Not something that somehow or other I'll do it, but within 2 weeks I'll be on my deathbed. Within 2 weeks, I'll be in so much anxiety. Actually, you're killing your spiritual life if you over-endeavor in that way. But you have to be very, very enthusiastic to perform tapasya in an intelligent way. Yes, what we do is we, whatever our bodily maintenance is, we take care of it according to the needs. And then tapasya means every given moment beyond that, we are struggling for Krishna. Struggling to do more for Krishna. Yes?
Prabhu is asking a question.
Who?
Anand.
Acha, what is the question?
He says, how do we distinguish between spiritual happiness and material happiness? Like when we are dancing in kirtan, etc., how should we distinguish that this is just an extension of our material, we are trying to enjoy material?
Very easy. When you don't feel like dancing, if you dance for Krishna, and when you do feel like dancing, you dance for Krishna, that means it's spiritual. If you do it only when you feel like it, and you don't do it because you don't feel like it, that is material. Huh? But if you do it anyway because it's what Krishna likes, then it is spiritual. Don't be afraid of enjoying kirtan. Krishna loves to see his devotee enjoying kirtan. That's his pleasure, to see you blissfully dancing together. Your happiness is his happiness. But even if you don't enjoy it, you're situated only on doing it for his pleasure. We are not for or against enjoying devotional service. We do our service as enthusiastic as we can. We serve the Vaishnavas in such a way as we can. And if Krishna gives us divine pleasure, we just go on with our service in that mood. And if he gives us divine pain, we go on with our service in that mood. Huh? Sitosna shukadukata agamapayano nityas tamstatikshasvabharata. A devotee just goes on with his service and tolerates happiness, distress, pleasure, pain, honor, dishonor. Just goes on with his service with great enthusiasm for Krishna. Spiritual is when we're doing it for Krishna. Material is when we are doing it for our own selfish purposes or for the selfish purposes of others. Yes?
Maharaj? Prabhupada has said in one of his question answer session that if you don't get time to read Bhagavatam, you should cut down your sleep and read Bhagavatam and then only go to sleep. So this might, don't you think this might hamper our spiritual life?
What is the use of your sleep if you're not, the whole purpose of sleep is to get enough rest to hear Bhagavatam nicely. Huh? We're not sleeping for sleep's sake. We're sleeping for Krishna's sake. Huh? If it means we're not hearing the Bhagavatam, better we, no matter what, we have to cut down sleep. The reason why we get enough sleep is to perform devotional service properly. And if we're not hearing Bhagavatam with attention, then we cannot perform devotional service properly. So you must hear. Yes?
Maharaj, we have seen that many people have taken over and ever in the past. You say that, you know, you need require guidance. So, when Srila Prabhupada was here, it was sometimes not possible for people to take gig. Just like you are here at this time, people can take guidance whether which program we should go, we should not. But, and then people give up their lot of things, time, money, energy. And sometimes we miss that guidance and we make, spiritual life is a real endeavor. It's not that easy thing. And when we somehow or other we try to reach a particular stage so that we can make progress. And thereafter, we may not get day-to-day guidance, and then at that time, sometimes we get little shock in the life, and that completely frustrates whatever we have progress we have made. Means at that time we feel it now, Maharaj, immediately Maharaj's guidance is not here, now I'm left alone, what I'm supposed to do. Then life becomes boring, completely the point which you are developing, that we are trying over and over, we are doing, because it's always an over and over to make little spiritual progress. And then it becomes completely boring when there is no guidance, when because the person with whom, for whom we are working, he is not immediately available.
Haribo. First of all, don't think that to not over-endeavor means to become lazy. You have to be enthusiastic. You have to struggle. You have to surrender. You have to push yourself. No doubt. You have to push yourself and allow others to push you. But you have to do it with intelligence. When we say don't over-endeavor, it doesn't mean, well, now that's my license to just become very comfortable. Huh? No. You have to push. You have to struggle. You have to be swimming upstream. You must be running uphill. You have to push yourself, and you have to allow others to push you. But you have to do it with intelligence. Maya wants you to be lazy, but Maya also wants you to go so hard that you're going to burn out like a firecracker. You're going to go to the end of the fuse, and then you're just going to explode. And then you'll just be like this paper just laying on the ground. You see in Diwali. First there's fire, and all that's left is just some ripped up papers. Over-endeavor is like being a firecracker. Under-endeavor is like being dead. You don't get anywhere. So you have to struggle, you have to work, you have to push, you have to surrender. But you have to do it with good intelligence. That the way you're pushing, the way you're surrendering, will have longevity. You'll be able to continue in this way with enthusiasm. And as far as accepting guidance, if you are sincere, you will seek out guidance. If you are insincere, you will say, oh, my guru is not here, who will I turn to? But the fact is there are so many wonderful Vaishnavas who understand the philosophy and who can help you. And if you're sincere, you'll turn to them and you'll accept guidance. If you're sincere when you're reading the books or hearing the tapes of the great acharyas or the great devotees of the Lord, you will receive so much guidance through them. Practically all your questions will be answered. What to speak of all the devotees who are present, who have so much experience. To not have guidance means we are insincere and we're not looking for it. It's like when Srila Prabhupada left this world, so many devotees just said, who's going to guide us now? And zoom! They just, nobody's going to guide us, so how can we surrender? How can we push? How can we be enthusiastic? So they just decided we should just have a comfortable life and chant Hare Krishna. And they ended up just going down, 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 down into the ocean of material life. Huh? But those who were sincere, Prabhupada's not here, but he's in his books giving guidance, and I'll find it there. And he's within his senior disciples, and I'll find it there. And the devotees who kept looking, kept finding guidance in the representatives of the Guru, the Vaishnavas, and in the words of the Guru, such devotees are just going up, 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 higher and higher and higher, struggling more and more and more in their lives. So it is just a question of our sincerity. If we're insincere, we can justify anything for this reason or that reason. If we're sincere, where there's a will, there's a way. If we want to be inspired, if we want transcendental guidance, if we want it, Krishna will give it. If we do not want it, Krishna will let us be. Any other questions?
Maharaj, you are giving so much emphasis on the Bhagavatam class. Now, this is the problem of all the devotees who come for the Bhagavatam classes. You say that you should get a sufficient sleep so that you can listen Bhagavatam class very nicely. On the other hand, many of the devotees, just to try more, to get more and more association, they try to go and attend the evening programs of yours. Now, because they attend the evening programs, they could not get sufficient sleep, and they, whenever they come to Bhagavatam class, either they don't give the full concentration because of that. So what is the what should we do exactly? Should we attend the evening programs of yours, or should we not attend? Because by attending evening programs, we are not able to give the full concentration into Bhagavatam.
You should find a house close to the temple, then you can do both. As long as you're in Buriwali, you cannot do it. It's a practical question. Huh? The time that you have is not because of evening programs or morning programs. The time that you are spending is sitting on trains for 4 hours every day. If you move close to the temple, then that 4 hours you can go to so many programs. And you'll have nice sleep. Does that answer your question? But we should know how much sleep we need. Generally, a devotee needs about 6 hours sleep. And somehow or other, we should fit it in. But we should be enthusiastic to hear about the Shastra. We should be enthusiastic for sadhu satsang. Huh? And somehow or other, these other things, we have to make ends meet with our eating and sleeping and bodily maintenance. We have to somehow make ends meet. But we should model that around our devotional service, not vice versa. Huh? That is enthusiasm. Do you know what Prabhupada's definition of enthusiasm is? To endeavor with intelligence. We should all memorize that. Rupa Goswami says, enthusiasm and patience are the most important ingredients in surrender. And the definition of enthusiasm is to endeavor with intelligence.